On today's episode of Rise, Grind, Repeat, we talk to Tim from Rialto Marketing. We talk about why businesses need to do a better job at getting back to the fundamentals of digital marketing. Dive right in. So, Tim, thank you so much for joining on another episode of Rise, Grind, Repeat. I'm excited. We talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, small business owners, but not often do we get to talk to other marketing agencies. And kind of as we were talking before this, I'm more excited about what we're going to kind of talk about and pick your brain on. Really going back to the fundamentals. I think in today's digital world, people overcomplicate strategy and what needs to be done. And I think going back to those fundamentals is something that I think a lot of people need to revisit. But before we start nerding out, I'd love to kind of hear your background. How did you get started on your entrepreneurial journey?
Yep, absolutely. And thanks for having me, Justin. I'm super excited to dig into this. You know, my entrepreneurial journey, I would say, is I wasn't one of those, you know, kids that was, you know, selling baseball cards and had a lemonade stand and I was making a bunch of money as a kid. The only thing I cared about when I was a kid was having fun, getting out, riding my bike and playing with my friends. When I was just about to graduate from college, you know, I still had no idea what I wanted to do. You know, I was a math major, figured, hey, this is going to be, math is used all over the place, super important skill to have. I graduated and I was like, man, what the hell, what am I going to do? And my dad had been an entrepreneur for a long time. And he had a couple different businesses. One of those businesses was a wholesale distribution company. And he had started about a year or two before I graduated. There was no full-time employees. He was using employees from his other related company to, you know, for both companies. And I got out and I said, you know, I said, hey, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. Why don't I work with you? Why don't I help you? I can help it within the distribution company. You don't have to worry about it. It'll give me some opportunities to kind of figure out what I want to do. Well, 3 months later, I was hooked. I'm like, I don't want to go anywhere. You know, will you keep me? And so I just grew into that. You know, my dad was running his other company. I was managing the distribution company from a day-to-day basis. I was the first full-time employee. And it went from there. I became a partner. We had multiple partners in that business, but we grew about 60% a year for over 10 years. And then we sold it, you know, so I started, it was an amazing experience. I learned a ton. I soaked up information like a sponge. And, you know, I was the first full-time employee. By the time we sold it, we had, you know, 20 plus employees. We had three different locations. It was a huge, huge learning experience for me. And then after we got bought, I worked for that company for another 3 years, moved out to Colorado with the company. And about a year after that, it was 2009, I got laid off. We got bought by a public company. We all know what happened in 2008. They started freaking out and they were like, oh my God, they closed 30% of the branch locations we had across the country. And I got laid off. So, you know, fortunately, I was in a position where I was like, you know, I can take some time to kind of figure out what I want to do. And I decided to get into residential real estate. I'd always been interested in real estate. Figured, hey, I don't know if this is what I want to do long term, but I can learn it and start to invest in real estate. Well, you know, fast forward, you know, two and a half years later, I was like, this is not for me. I do not like this. I'm getting out of bed every day dreading it. And what's the point? You know, if we're not enjoying what we're doing, especially as entrepreneurs, why are we doing it? And so I shifted gears and that's when I started Rialto Marketing and that's what I'm doing still today. But, you know, it wasn't a straight path. The entrepreneurial journey never is. It was more of a, you know, scribble on a page. But it's brought me to where I am today and I'm thankful for the successes and the failures, you know, you learn from both.
Yeah, no. And I mean, interesting time in 2009 to get into the real estate right after the big crash. But I mean, I'm sure that there's a huge supply and demand because I'm sure a lot of realtors left because they're like, well, if home prices are coming down, I don't want to be in this industry. And I'm sure that led to a lot of opportunity on your end.
I've always felt like there's opportunity in every market. And at that point in real estate, there was a ton of people that were about to go into foreclosure. So I actually, man, I was outside my comfort zone every day. I was door knocking people that were in foreclosure. And sometimes they'd answer, sometimes they wouldn't, you know, and if they answered, I'd talk to them and I was trying to help them out of foreclosure. And so I was doing a lot of short sale business where, you know, we were trying to get approval from the bank to allow the homeowner to sell the house for less than it was worth. So, you know, it was, I learned a ton doing it, but I just did not enjoy it. I was working way too hard for the amount of money that I was making. And I said, man, I have to do something different. You know, somebody asked me the other day what I didn't like about it. And I said, look, when I was in wholesale distribution, we were selling consumer electronics. We were selling home theater equipment, you know, distributed audio. It's like, I go to a party to talk to somebody and they'd ask what I did. And I told them, and they'd be like, oh my God, that's so cool. Tell me more about that. When you're a realtor, you go to a party and you're like a realtor and they like want to shift and go to another conversation, you know, so I don't know. It's a great field for a lot of people. It just was not a good fit for me. And so I had to shift gears.
Yeah. And so how did you go from distribution to a realtor to opening a marketing agency? Where did marketing kind of play into this whole journey?
Yeah. So when I was looking at shifting gears from real estate, I took some time and I said, what was it that I liked so much about being in distribution? It was dynamic. It was constantly changing. So it kept me on my toes. The clients that we were working with, we were helping them grow their business. And as a result, our business grew from that. And so there were a lot of similarities to that and marketing. And when I initially got involved in marketing, we were actually only focused on mobile applications. So we were selling mobile apps. Mobile apps were super hot at the time. And we were focused on helping small businesses, but a lot of our business was also in the K-12 education space. And so, you know, we were helping them communicate with their students, their parents. You know, if you try to get information from most school websites on your phone, it's an absolute disaster. Doesn't work. So I saw a lot of opportunity there. And that's why I shifted gears and got into that. But you know, I'm not doing that today. Our business has shifted again. So it's been an interesting ride.
No, I mean, like you mentioned before, I mean, it's just a zigzag. I mean, there's no straight line to entrepreneurship. And even more so when once you get into the agency life, it's literally no day is the same. No hour is the same. And it's, dealing with client relationships, dealing with new business, executing and fulfilling on jobs. I mean, it is a lot of hats to wear. I'd love to get more into kind of what the business is now, what you guys do, but quick question. I know you mentioned, majored in math. No, being on the website, it looks like you guys do a lot of digital. How much has math played into data analysis, looking at the numbers side?
Yeah. Having that analytical side is incredibly helpful from a marketing perspective when you can, because I can drill into the data and understand the data and interpret it. Ironically, though, man, I write so much now, you know, because there is so much. So, you know, the fact that I was a fairly good student, and although I was good at math, I was still pretty decent at writing in English, has helped me a ton because, you know, I write so much now from a content perspective with all the stuff that we do. So, but the math definitely helps from an analytical side of it.
Yeah, no, love it. And I can't wait to dig into the content side, but you know, before we get too deep, would love to, I know you kind of mentioned it, but what is the name of the company and what is it that specifically you guys do?
Yeah. So the name of our company is Rialto Marketing. And we help service businesses simplify marketing so they can grow with less stress. And we do that by creating and implementing a plan so they can communicate the right message to the right people. That's what marketing is all about. So we focus on the fundamentals first, get it laying that foundation. And then some of our clients will just take the plans and run with it. Others need additional help. So we may coach and make sure that they're getting the outside eyes they need, or we may implement for them and actually do it for them. And so we get involved in, you know, in all the various digital marketing channels that are out there from an implementation standpoint, but it's a mix of coaching and then done for you work.
Gotcha. No, I love it. Cause I mean, I equate it to marketing is just nothing but having conversations. I think before it was just walking around with a microphone, yelling at everyone, where now, I mean, how targeted we can get and the type of content we can make. I mean, the cost of trading content has come down greatly, you know, over the last 10, 20, 30 years, whatever that may be. But now we have the opportunity to isolate different personas, different audience segments, and come up with content that speaks specifically to them and have more of a one-to-one conversation rather than one-to-many. And I agree. I think laying the foundation is often overlooked. Everyone just tries to get to market. Let's get some ads going. Let's do some cool videos. But when it comes to that foundation, I mean, knowing that you're so big on that, how do you define what that foundation really is?
Yeah. So the way I look at it is I call it the marketing strategy trilogy. One, you got to know who your target market is. You know, who are your ideal clients? How are you going to serve those people? Two, you have to have clear, engaging messaging to that target market. And three, you have to have a plan. You know, the plan you start with is not going to be the plan that you're going to end with. But I find so many business owners are just battling information overload when it comes to marketing. There's so many different channels. There's tons of different tactics, and they just feel overwhelmed. And when they're overwhelmed, they can't create a plan. But if you don't have a plan, you're not going to have consistent long-term success. And so that's why the fundamentals, they're just so important. And like you said, people skip them because they're not cool. They're not sexy. It's not, you know, the latest, greatest channel. It's not TikTok. It's not Clubhouse or whatever it is. But you have to have those, because if you don't, you're going to waste time. You're going to waste money. You're going to throw tactics against a wall like spaghetti, hoping it sticks. And inevitably it doesn't. And so that's why I love the strategy side of marketing, because it's so important.
Yep. No, I couldn't agree. I mean, it's very hard to find successful people that didn't have a plan of attack, milestones along the way, how you're going to get there, and being strategic with it. And I mean, if you're talking about growing your business, I think more people should lean on these fundamentals and really identify what is the strategy. I mean, it's everyone wants to grow, but yet not put in the work to do the things that allow that growth. And I couldn't agree more. It's really, again, having that conversation. So, I mean, for those businesses that are like, okay, I got teenagers, I have single parents, those are my audiences, now let's go. Is there anything in between there, or how do you come up with that communication plan and whatnot for each of the, I guess, audiences that you want to target?
Yeah, I think the first thing that's important to look at is how do I identify who those ideal clients are? And with existing businesses, the easiest place to start from my perspective is to ask three questions. One is, who do you enjoy working with? Okay, what's the point in doing business with all kinds of people that you don't like? Your days are going to be so painful, it's not even funny. Two, who are your most profitable clients? And we're not going to stay in business if we're working for clients that we aren't making money on. And three, who do we do our best work for? The group of customers, existing or past customers, that you can answer positively to all three of those questions, that's where you start to look for your ideal clients. Because they're going to be profitable. You do great work, which means you're going to get referrals. They're going to be super happy. Your retention is going to be better. So you take that group, and then you can start to dig into the demographics of the people in that group. And you can start to look at the psychographics, which the psychographics, I think, are just as important, if not more important. What are their attitudes? What are their feelings? What goals do they want to achieve? The psychographics are what get people to buy, you know, and that's how the psychographics will help you create your marketing messaging. But if you look at the psychographics and the demographics of that larger group, inevitably what typically happens is one to three groups kind of surface from that. Those are your ideal client types. And most businesses don't have more than three ideal client types. I think if you try to focus on more, it's going to be really difficult. And a lot of people, their roadblock to this is, well, if I niche down on one ideal client type, it's going to limit my business. That's not the case at all. What it does is it helps focus your marketing efforts, because we're not saying those are the only people you're going to do business with. We're just saying those are the only people you're going to focus your marketing efforts towards. Because you can't, if you try to reach everybody, you're just going to fall flat, you know, and you're going to waste a lot of money. But when you understand those 1 to 3 ideal client types you're trying to reach, it becomes so much easier to start to identify, where do these people congregate? How can I get in front of these people? And when you can determine where they are, right? Now you know where they are. Now you can figure out what message I need to get in front of those people in those different channels. And it's just become, your marketing becomes so much easier. But when people say, oh, I'm trying to, you know, I work with entrepreneurs. Well, great. Jesus. I mean, they're everywhere, you know? And so the more you can dig down, the easier it's going to be.
And I mean, how much of this comes out of it is identifying those pain points in those different, I guess, personas, audiences, whatever they may be, whether it's vertical, job title, whatever it may be. How much of that comes out and how much does that kind of fuel the content? Because to me, it's sure, you could try and do business with everyone. But if you're not specifically speaking to any type of pain point, you can't bring a value that or a solution to that pain point and really capture their attention and get them to go, all right, well, I do have that problem and it's been annoying for the last 6 months, 12 months. If you can solve it, I'd love to talk. And that creates that time to chat. And then once it gets going, I mean, so how much of the pain points come out of this? And do you guys focus on that and really tie features benefits to that?
Yeah. So once you understand who your ideal clients are, right? And then you can start to move into the messaging side of it. And with messaging, what we really want to do, when I say messaging, I'm talking about how you communicate what you do and the value that you provide. It's essential. If you can't clearly do that, you're not going to convert prospects into customers, and your message is going to fall flat. But you can't create your marketing message until you understand who your ideal clients are. You know, you just said it. If I'm trying to reach everyone, well, every entrepreneur doesn't have the same problem, right? But when you can dig deeper and get more specific, it becomes much easier to get inside your customer's head. You know, what you really want to do is enter the conversation that they're having in their head about what you do. And when you can do that, then you can start to identify, hey, what's this main problem that they're dealing with? You know, what are the consequences of this problem that they're just continuing to experience? And how can I come in and offer them a solution? And what are the benefits then going to be when they work with me? But it all starts with your target market. Then you can start to get into your messaging. And from a messaging standpoint, we use StoryBrand. Are you familiar with StoryBrand?
I am not.
StoryBrand was it's a company that was founded by Donald Miller, and he basically took the hero's journey. The hero's journey is a common storytelling framework, and he tweaked it a little bit, and he's popularized this storytelling framework that you can use to create your marketing message. And when I first got exposed to it, somebody was talking to me about it. I got a little bit more in depth with it, and I was like, oh my God, this is great. This is so easy to understand. And thousands of businesses have used this framework to create clear, engaging messaging. And I think anytime you can use frameworks or systems within your business, your likelihood of success is going to be much higher. And that's why I love this framework. But the framework basically just says, look, every story has a character. That character has a problem. They meet a guide. The guide gives them a plan that calls them to action so they can avoid failure and reach success. And so what we do is we take that and we apply it to our business, where our customers are the hero and we are the guide. Because our customers aren't looking for another hero, right? Heroes, if you think about stories, heroes got problems, man. They have a problem that they're trying to figure out and they don't know how to solve it. And they meet this guide that's like, hey, I've been there and done that. Here's what you need to do. So we want to position our company as the guide that knows exactly, hey, these are the 3 steps or 4 steps, whatever it may be that you need to take to get from where you currently are to where you want to be. So let's look at an example. The original Point Break, okay, is one of my favorite movies. Don't fault me for it, man. You know, Keanu Reeves, he's a green FBI agent. Problem, there's a band of bank robbers in Southern California called the ex-presidents. The guide in the story is his partner, Gary Busey, who's a seasoned FBI agent. He's been there. He's done that. He knows what the hell's going on. So the plan is, he says, look, I think that the ex-presidents are surfers. So you need to learn how to surf. That's the call to action. You need to learn how to surf. And I think you're going to come across this group of buddies, and hopefully you'll infiltrate them so that we can avoid failure, which is they ride off into the sunset, and we reach success, which is we catch them and they go away to jail, right? So all we do is we take that same framework and we apply it to our business. You know, so our customers, as the character in the story, what do they want as it relates to what we do? In the problem, we bring in the villain in the story, and we talk about three levels of problems as well: the external, the internal, and the philosophical problem. You know, so for marketing, right? For me, the villain is information overload, right? Our customers are battling information overload. What's the external problem? There's a lot of them, but it all really boils down to they don't have a plan. Okay, how is that making them feel? The internal problem is they're just feeling overwhelmed. But the philosophical problem, the thing that's right versus wrong in the story, is marketing shouldn't be difficult. It is for a lot of people, but it shouldn't be that way. And so from there, we then, you know, how do you establish yourself as the guide? Guides have empathy and they have authority and credibility. So we simply inject empathetic statements. We understand what it's like to struggle with your marketing. You know, we understand what it's like to battle information overload. Authority, testimonials, certifications, awards you've won, clients you've worked with, those all help position you as the guide. And then from there, you just keep working through it. You know, what's the plan? For us, it's, you know, those three simple steps, right? It's, you know, it's get a free consultation, get the right plan, and grow your business with less stress, right? Are there a ton of things that you and I both do as marketers? Yeah, there's all kinds of other things, but do people really care in the beginning? We need to keep it clear and simple. And then from there, would we inject, what are the failure elements? If they don't work with us, what consequences will they continue to deal with? And then success, we need to paint that picture of success. And so, you know, we use the framework, and once you have the framework in place, every time you need to create a marketing message, you go back to the framework. You're not reinventing the wheel. You're just pulling, each element is like a Lincoln log, and you just pull the Lincoln log out and you can build a little house with various elements, but you don't need to use every one of them every time. But you know exactly what you're going to say because you're going back to the same resource each and every time.
I love that. I think that's definitely a different perspective on the hero's journey, and I think it's easier to digest and understand. That being said, I've always thought that a lot of, you know, creative or anything that goes to market, people kind of flip flop the hero and the guide, I guess. Where I guess for instance, it's like for a marketing agencies want to come out as the character and then let the client be the guide rather than the other way around, where, hey, we're not the hero in the overall creative. We're the guide trying to make you the hero and position the potential client as the hero. And that's kind of what I see. Is that kind of a similar, I guess, yes, oversight, or is there something else that I guess are big missed opportunities whenever people kind of try and create this framework?
The biggest mistake that most businesses make is they don't focus on how they can help their customers, right? Our customers don't care about us. They only care about the fact, can we solve their problem or not? And when you use, most businesses end up positioning themselves as the hero, like you said, and our customers don't want that. And when you use the framework, it eliminates that mistake. It eliminates you positioning yourself as the hero and not the guide. And that's one of the reasons why I love it so much. It takes that one big mistake out of the picture. It also eliminates one of the other big mistakes, which people make it difficult for them to understand what you actually do. And we are so impatient at this point. If I land on somebody's website and I see that information right at the top and I read it and I'm like, what do these people do? I'm not going to take the time. Yeah. I'm going to go back to the search results and click on the next listing. So we don't want to be cute and clever with our marketing message. We want to be clear. And using this framework makes it so much easier for you to do that.
No, and this is great. And I mean, it's now that we kind of know who we'd want to be talking to, we have this framework created, we have our messaging nailed down. Really, the next step is, all right, how do I get this to those people? Is it Facebook ads, Google ads, email? I mean, I think there is a distribution overload in the different channels, and there's something new every week. And so for those that are just, you know, I have everything, but and I'm trying all these different channels, I'm not really seeing any wins. I guess, how do you guys go about choosing the right channels for your clients that's really going to drive those business results that they're looking for?
Yeah. So from a planning perspective, we use and we recommend a 90-day plan. Okay. You mentioned it before. It's people overcomplicate marketing. People overcomplicate a lot of things.
Yeah.
But with marketing, you know, last year, right, we're in this pandemic. If you had spent multiple thousands of dollars on a 1 or 2 year marketing plan that's 20 pages in January of last year, you would have burned it come March. And most of us would have. And frankly, 20 pages, it's too complicated. It goes into the top of a desk drawer. Our marketing is evolving very quickly because our businesses are evolving quickly. And so we have to use a marketing plan that's simple, and we have the ability to make course corrections along the way. So here's how I look at it. I look at marketing in 90-day sprints. So there's 6 steps to this 90-day marketing plan. 1, you need to outline who your target market is. So even if you just have a paragraph of your 1 to 3 ideal client types, it's better than having nothing, okay? 2, what's your goal? What's my goal for the next 90 days? It needs to be specific. It needs to be measurable. It's going to be time-bound because it's a 90-day plan. But that 90-day goal is going to be obviously something that's going to help support and push me closer to my 1-year goal or my 3-year goal, whatever it may be. Then the third part is, what's my budget? How much money do I have to invest in my marketing? And what are the resources that I have from a staffing perspective? Because your staff is going to help you and is going to tell you, how much time do these people have to help us execute and implement our marketing? If we don't know what our budget and our time resources are, we may choose to bite off way more than we can chew and not implement anything, right? So we have to know where that is. Then the 4th step is, what's our current marketing plan? Now, when I say that, I realize that a lot of people may not even have an existing plan, okay? Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. The way I look at it, there are 8 main marketing channels. You have strategy, or those fundamentals, right? So your target market and your messaging. You have your website. You have content. You have SEO, social media. You have email marketing, paid ads, so Google, Facebook ads, those types of things, and then offline marketing. Those are the main channels. So in this current marketing plan, just write down, what are you currently doing, or what have you done that's already in place in each of those channels? Don't overthink it. Just write it down on paper. All we're doing here is identifying where we're starting from. You can't create a plan to get to where you want to be until you know where you're starting from, right? It's like your GPS. I can't plug it in to go to the Denver International Airport until I first let it know where the hell I'm starting from. That's the whole point in this 4th section. Then in the 5th section, what am I going to do in the next 90 days in each of those channels? Now, if I don't know who my target market is and I don't have good messaging, the next 90 days, that's what I'm going to do. Okay, you got to focus on that first. Then for most people, your website is the most important marketing asset you have. So after the fundamentals, you got to make sure that your website is right. And then from there, you can just expand down. Depending on how much money I have and the resources I have, I might focus on multiple channels, or I might only focus on one of those channels. That's okay. And then the 6th thing is, what metrics am I going to track? Don't overthink this. As a math major, I can get down into the weeds. Really, it's those high-level statistics that are going to help you determine whether the actions that you're taking are having an impact. And then at the end of the 90 days, you just look at what worked, what didn't, make your updates to the plan, wash, rinse, and repeat. That's it. And one of the things I put some free resources together for your audience, and I'll give you the link so that they have access to it. But the template for the messaging that we use, the template for the 90-day plan we use is there. I also have in there what we call our Marketing Evolution Index Checklist, which looks at those various marketing channels in phase 1, 2, and 3. So it gives you kind of a framework and a checklist to look at, okay, I'm just beginning. What elements do I need to have on my website to make sure I'm getting it right? Check, 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 check. Okay, cool. Now I can move on to the second phase of my website. But it gives people kind of a guidepost or a roadmap to follow to kind of hone in on, okay, I've done these things. What haven't I done? And where should I focus my marketing efforts next?
No, I absolutely love that. That is very well said. The big thing that I, you know, the biggest takeaway I see from there, and I think something a lot of people struggle with is that goal part. It's like, well, I want a lot of sales, but, and I'm huge on, you know, those SMART goals, something that you can track that's, but I don't think it should be revenue driven. I think to me, it should be more focused on what are the different metrics that are going to lead to that revenue, whether it's lead, it's people reach, whatever it may be. So, I mean, whenever it comes to building out those, I guess, goals or outcomes, desired outcomes, how do you guys help companies figure those out?
Yeah, so I think this is a really important distinction. So that overall marketing goal is what I call an outcome-based goal, right? So like you said, I mean, it could be revenue. It could be the number of clients that they want to bring on. Whatever that is, I think it's important to remember that with an outcome-based goal, you could do everything that's in your plan, and there may be things beyond your control that impact your ability to hit that goal. So maybe I wanted to double my business the first quarter of last year and COVID hit and everything blew up, right? I could have done everything in my plan that I could have. I could have been getting results, but I didn't hit my goal because there were things beyond my control. So all outcome-based goals are like that, but you have to have a general idea of where you're going, right? And so I like to have that overall goal there, but then I like to focus my efforts on the actions that I'm going to take to help me get to that goal. Because the outcome, I can control the actions I take. I cannot control some of the things that are going to allow me to hit that goal. But to help clients identify what that goal is really just digging deeper into what are their longer term objectives, and then breaking down, you know, where do you want to be in 5 years? Where do you want to be in 1 year, frankly? You know, when I look at like 5-10 year goals, I mean, honestly, that's pie in the sky stuff. There's too many things can happen between now and then. But having a general idea of, okay, in 5 years, I want to be here, and be able to kind of break down, okay, well, in a perfect world, if I'm going to get there, what needs to happen? What kinds of things are going to be in place at that point in time for me to have reached that goal? And then you can start to work backwards to think, okay, well, in 1 year, I'm going to have to be here if I want to be on track to hit that goal. And then, okay, well, great. Well, if you want to be there in 1 year, at the end of the next 3 months, where do you need to be to get closer to that 1 year goal? So it's really just a matter of breaking things down into smaller bite-sized chunks to get to that goal that you need to focus on for the next 90 days.
Yeah. And I think more times than not, everyone just because things are so complicated and attention spans are so short, it's only looking at, you know, 30, 60, 90 day goals and not trying to reverse engineer it. It's like, where do I want to be in 3 years? If that's where I want to be, what is it going to take to get there? And is there a clear path? Is that even doable? Based off the resources that we have and whatnot. And I think, again, that is just a big step that's missed. And you get a lot of companies that, you know, great messaging, great get to market and all that, but don't really have a clear sense of what their goals are. And then you get 90 days in, it's like, well, we don't know if we did good or bad because we didn't really know what the benchmark was to determine success or not. So love everything there. And I think, you know, the thing that I love that you mentioned is, 3 year goals, 5 years goals, they're, I mean, kind of pie in the sky. But another thing is the 12 month plan, 20 pages, it's just going to sit there. How much time and energy goes into planning that out? I'm a big believer that I think a lot of companies spend too much time trying to perfect before getting to market and letting the market kind of help optimize and pivot in real time. You know, knowing that you're big on planning, what is that fine balance between not planning too much and not getting to market, but also having some sort of solid plan?
Yeah, as you were saying that, this quote came to mind, and it's implement now and perfect as you go. And with marketing, along with a lot of other things, nothing's ever going to be perfect. And, you know, you and I both know this. Look, marketing, it's changing all the time, but there are frameworks. We have past experience. We have systems that are in place that we know have worked in the past. And so, you know, we use those over and over again, but there are always little nuances. And so we've got to measure what's happening, so that we can then determine what's working, what's not, and make those small course corrections along the way. So that's why I love this 90-day plan so much. It prevents you from overcomplicating things. Because there's six sections here. I mean, even if you write a lot, this is not going to be more than two or three pages. So it helps prevent you from overthinking things. Just put the stuff down on paper and start to execute. And as you start to execute, the metrics that you're measuring are going to start to tell you whether the actions you're taking are having an impact. It also eliminates distraction, right? As entrepreneurs, as business owners, we have these grand plans, and it's so easy to get distracted, especially with marketing. And so if you don't have a plan, and next week some influencer saying, oh my God, you got to be on TikTok. It is blowing up and we're generating tons of leads. And if you don't have a plan, you're like a squirrel chasing a nut. You just go right after it. But if you have that plan in place, it allows you to be disciplined enough to go, you know what? Is TikTok on my plan for the next 90 days? No, it is not. I'm not going to forget about it. Maybe I'll just put it on my tickler file, and I've got it on a list that I may want to look at it later, but it's not going to distract me right now for the next 90 days. That's where the huge benefit comes in with the plan.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And I think it is sticking to that plan. I think that it's tough for entrepreneurs because it's the next shiny thing can pop up and it's like, well, they're doing great. If I don't do it now, I'm going to miss out on the opportunity. But I mean, the opportunity is not going to leave in 90 days. So I think I love that framework. And if it does leave in 90 days, it probably wasn't that big of an opportunity to begin with.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Things move fast, but I don't think things move that fast. All right. It's not like you missed the podcasting window in 90 days.
Exactly. And I'm loving all this. I love your approach. I love the way you think about things, just from start to getting things into market and having that plan of attack of how that strategy is going to evolve. I'd love it if you had any examples of how you kind of deployed this type of framework for a client or something that was extremely fun to work on, where you might have had some pushback or didn't get belief in this type of system. Whenever you guys deployed it, what those numbers look like, the data look like after.
Yeah, they're oftentimes, it's not uncommon to get a lot of pushback from clients because most clients want immediate results. And frankly, I think a lot of marketers we've basically set ourselves up, right? Because there's a lot of marketers that promise the world and then don't deliver it. My approach is always, look, I'm just going to tell it to you straight. And if I believe you have unrealistic expectations, then I'm going to tell you, and you're probably not a good fit for us because I want to work with you long-term. And if you expect me to, you know, double your leads in the next month, I'm probably not a good fit. But my approach is just is basically to have a similar conversation to what we've just had, you know, which is here's the fundamentals. Here's why we focus on these first. And at the end of that conversation, most people get it. They realize, you know what, I'm going to have to invest in this. It's going to take a little bit of time, but taking, you know, a couple months now is going to pay so many more dividends down the road rather than jumping into tactics immediately. And, you know, just wasting time and money because we're going to have to come back to the fundamentals at some point. So, you know, we have a client right now, a commercial cleaning client. And in the beginning, we worked with them on their messaging. We put their website together, and then we put a general plan together for them. Some of their plan we're working on them with, some of them were not. But you know, their business, I'm trying to remember the exact numbers. Don't hold me to this, but you know, we're doing paid ads for them. They're doing some email marketing stuff. They are doing some cold outreach, but their business has grown like 60% in the last year.
Wow.
And, you know, now some of that, you know, could be because of some of the things that are happening with COVID. But it's not all. And they're generating consistent leads each month, and they're converting a number of those leads into new customers. One of the big things that I talked to him about probably a month ago was because we were seeing their cost per lead go up with Google Ads. And I was getting a little bit concerned that it wasn't profitable for them. And so I talked to him and he said, yeah, dude, he said, their monthly average revenue from a client has gone up more than 5 times.
Wow.
So they're getting better clients, higher paying clients that are doing more recurring work. And so, you know, I mean, I went into that conversation going, man, I don't know if Google Ads is going to be a good thing for them long term. We may have to shift funds somewhere else. And for me, look, I'm channel or tactic agnostic. I don't really care. I just want them to get results. And if things are changing and that's not working anymore, then we need to shift. But coming out of that conversation, I was like, oh, okay, cool. Well, yeah, man, if your average lifetime or your lifetime value is that high, this is still very profitable. So cool. Let's keep running with it. That's a high level example. Does that help?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No. Isn't it funny how some of those meetings will happen? You go in kind of on the defense and we're not defense, but you know, we need to make some pivots. We need to do this. And all of a sudden it's like, no, this is working great. And then some meetings you can go in going, oh, I can't wait to present these numbers. And it's like, those are okay.
You know, it's funny you say that because with clients, I always try to take the approach of I would rather head things off the pass if I see things aren't going in the right direction, than wait for the client to ask about it. You know, and so I just told them, you know, because we had been telling them, it's like, hey, I mean, because their Google Ads were working awesome for months. And then all of a sudden, things started to get spotty. Things would work okay for a week, then they would change. And, you know, it would just kind of flip flop and it was just up and down. And, you know, I said, man, if I was him, I would be looking at this going, man, our cost per lead is going all over the place. And so I just said, look, we need to jump on the phone and chat about this because I have some ideas. I want to run it by you. And, you know, so I had a proactive conversation. It ended up being a really good conversation. And, you know, and I don't know. You just can't be afraid of what they're going to say. You just need to tell them. And, you know, they're paying us for our advice, right?
Yeah.
But it's their business and they're in it day to day. So we have to create this plan with them. It's the way I look at it is a partnership. It's not just us telling them, you know, yeah, when we think they're making decisions that aren't going to be good long-term as a consultant, we need to communicate that. But a lot of times clients have, you know, great insight and visibility that we don't have.
Yep. No, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, continuing on the whole planning, what does it look like for the next 90 days for you and your company? What's kind of high on your guys' radar?
Yeah. So, our focus for the next 90 days, from a tactic and channel standpoint relies on two different things. One is, paid ads. So we're testing out some paid Facebook ads to, you know, try and we've got a funnel, a few funnels in place. We want to start driving some traffic to that and testing some things. And the second thing has to do with building a more robust referral and strategic partner network. So we've got a lot of other things that we have in place that we continue to do. We're producing a lot of content. I think we're doing a pretty good job on social. We're consistent with our email marketing. These are some other channels that we really need to get in and and start generating leads from those channels in addition to the ones that we're already generating leads from.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I think kind of similar paths of what we're going down as well. This has been great. A lot of insight. And as we kind of wrap up, I'd love to kind of hear. I mean, for the entrepreneur brand that, I mean, they're kind of picking up some traction. They kind of understand who their audience is, kind of what they want to say, but it's just confusing. They're overwhelmed with next steps and getting to market. I mean, what's the single biggest piece of advice that you'd have for them on getting over that and just getting to market?
Yeah, getting over that. So really touches on what we've already talked about, right? Make sure that you're not skipping the fundamentals that we've talked about. If you need help, the help is there, right? There's people like you and I. But here's what I'm going to tell you. I think one of the best things that you can do as a business owner, especially if you're not quite sure about your message, your target market, interview your existing clients. And I have a customer insight survey in the free resources that you can give your listeners that shows them, it's got a list of questions that you can ask, because oftentimes as business owners, we have such a hard time articulating our value because we can't see the forest through the trees. But you sit down, have a 10, 15 minute conversation with 8 to 10 of your existing or past customers. Oftentimes they can articulate your value, how they benefited from working with you, why they chose to work with you so much better than you can yourself. I guarantee you will take that information and you can use it to immediately improve what you're currently doing. If you don't feel comfortable doing that, look at your online reviews. Online reviews are a wealth of information about what you're doing well and what you're not. If you don't have a lot of customers, go look at your competitors' online reviews. You'll find out what's important to their clients, because their clients are probably yours. So,
yep. No, that last piece was good. I mean, I think there's a lot of people that, I mean, especially just starting out, that don't have those reviews, and it's like, well, I don't have much that I can ask. And so I think looking at competition and seeing what their reviews are, I think what generates that 5-star, what do they do to get that 5-star? On the other end, what do they do to kind of not do so great and get that 1-star? But I think it helps you figure out what the values are of the consumers in that segment.
Yeah. Well, look, the internet, we've got forums, we have Facebook groups, we have LinkedIn groups, we have social media. There's so many places you can go to do research on your various target markets and ideal clients.
That's cool. No, I can't wait to, I'll definitely follow you on social. I can't wait to watch your guys' growth. I mean, I love the strategy, love the mindset. I think everything that you're doing is what we're trying to do as well. And have no doubt that you're doing nothing but great stuff for your clients. And so I really appreciate the time.
Yep. Hey, thanks for having me, Dustin. It's been a lot of fun, and I appreciate the conversation.
Cool. Well, we'll chat soon.
You bet. Take care.
Thank you.